Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 211. I would like to first start off by saying thank you to Lance Mala, who dropped us an email and said that he really appreciated the podcast and that he enjoyed our solo review.
Oh, well, thank you, Lance.
It's nice to get feedback. We like it.
Yeah, for sure.
If you write us email saying nice things about the podcast, we'll say your name on the air, too.
Yeah. If you write us email saying mean things about the podcast, we'll read it.
And we'll spend the rest of the podcast making fun of you.
And also, like, fan questions.
Fan questions would be good, too. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Send us email. Ask us questions. We will answer them on the podcast.
And also tell us we're wrong. We like to argue.
Yeah, honestly, that should happen.
No.
Well, are you saying that Randy is never wrong?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. I mean, just make
there's never been a single recorded instance in the podcast.
Nope, exactly.
So, I mean, if anybody can think of one.
That's right. Be right back. I delete a bunch of stuff.
Done with Star Wars.
I'm sure there was one last week. all right. So, store news. We've got Free RPG Day coming up here in about a week, Saturday, June 16th.
Yep.
And we'll have free stuff to give away. And we'll also have indie RPGs going, so there's still space to sign up to play Dungeon World or the Western or the various other games that are running that day.
I'm thinking of slipping into at least one of those.
All right.
Yep.
And then Saturday, June 23rd is our All Ages Awesomeness.
Wait, I'm sorry. You said Western?
Yes.
What's the Western one?
It's a Western space powered by Apocalypse World.
I forgot about that. Is there a hook to it, like, or is it just like
it's just
an
Western?
Oh. Cool. Yeah, I will look into our very posts about it on Facebook and or on the website.
The fact that you don't know makes me nervous.
Like, yeah, I knew about the other ones. I just forgot there was a Western in the mix.
All right, and then All Ages Awesomeness is Saturday, June 23rd. We unfortunately, Chad Thomas will not be making it this year. He just got busy with deadlines and stuff, and so it is. But we'll still have several artists, local artists in to sketch for kids and talk about comics and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then in July, we'll have a Magic the Gathering Core 2019 open house and pre-release in the first couple weekends. More on that as time comes. News. So, Lock and Key, which I thought we talked about this, but I think I'm just thinking of it because this is the third try for Lock and Key at a TV show.
Yeah, I mean, this has been ongoing for at least, like, 3 years.
No, they didn't actually make two previous pilots.
They did.
They did. So there was a pilot on Fox that, by all accounts, was not great, and that show did not get picked up. Then there was a pilot for Hulu, which did not get picked up, but which is the basis for the pilot they're going to use for the Netflix series that's been greenlit to series.
Well, that is a crazy path.
Like Carlton Cuse. And
Carlton Cuse is running. He was supposed to run the Hulu show.
Well, I mean, weirdly, the first one had, like, Lena Headey as, like, the mom in there, and then she went decided that didn't get picked up, so she did
Game of Thrones. That
which
worked
is
out
insane.
Okay. Yeah. That worked out okay for her.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We've talked about occasionally, like, the kind of the embarrassment of riches sort of for, like, superhero movies that we've got.
Right.
We can start getting pretty picky now and all that.
Yep.
But also that, like, I still look back. Ang Lee's Hulk didn't do well. A few years later, they put out a version that, even though it's considered maybe like the least of the Marvel movies, helped kick off the, you know, the dawn of the new Marvel stuff, right?
Yep. Yep.
And they didn't have to wait forever in shame.
Yeah.
Now, like, here's something that has taken two shots. I would have thought meant it's dead in the water.
Yeah.
And now it's actually going to happen. And it's a good property. We know it's a good property.
Yeah.
And so it will probably rightfully get its shot. I am pleased that these things can happen. I mean, I suppose it's up there with, like, shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and The Expanse can get saved. And they
it's bizarre to think that a company says, like, yeah, we don't want that property that's written by Stephen King's son.
If it was poorly done.
Yeah, if it was poorly done. I just don't know if any of these have been poorly done.
By all accounts, the Fox pilot was not great.
Was it? Yeah. I'd heard the opposite. I'd heard that it was good. Just all people. There was just weird. They didn't want it.
There's definitely stuff that gets, like, there was a Beverly Hills Cop pilot that Sean Ryan was doing.
Yeah, I remember that.
And by all accounts, that pilot was terrible.
Yeah.
So good people can make bad things, and I think that's usually if there's a reason if it doesn't go forward. Because, yeah, there's certainly an audience for everything at this point, and there's plenty of channels for them. So
Nick, I actually never did get it. That's what it says. I need to get around to finish reading it at some point, Lock and Key. if you were to just kind of sum it up in like a few sentences, what would you say is like the premise of it?
That's about a sort of home, or I guess mansion,
like an estate kind of
thing. Yeah, an estate that has magical properties and magical doors that, if open, can do interesting things.
There's like these keys that, when they go through certain doors, they trigger.
One can turn you into a ghost, and one can unlock your mind so you can remove emotions, so you're not you don't have to be scared, or you know, the possibilities are
endless. A lot of big storytelling and character driven processes.
Like literally giant one.
How much would you say it is the horror genre, or does it just kind of is it just supernatural?
Well, there's supernatural, and there is definitely a horror element to it because there is a big bad or a big entity that's trying to get out, and mm-hmm. it kind of runs the. Through the ages, and sort of this has been an ongoing thing, but it all sort of focuses on one family.
That's well told.
It's a very good book.
Not based on a novel, right? A unique
no,
comic property?
No, this is his original thing. Him and the artist, is it Gabriel Rodriguez, I believe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who does a fantastic job throughout. And I think it's all available in trade, especially the specials that they did. They finally put that in a single trade as well.
I wonder, I mean, you know, for sure it's going to get tweaked for TV, and I'm sure they'll kind of expand on certain things.
Yeah.
But yeah, if people, like, want to get in and, like, read this story or try it out before the show hits, it's all there. It's a complete series.
It is.
Yep, yep. We also heard that Stuart Immonen is retired.
Yep. Yeah. You know what's interesting is that I think a lot of people will be like, who dat? Because he is not, like, if you don't follow creators closely, even if you do follow creators somewhat, he's somewhat always been a little bit below the radar, but everybody who knew him loved him.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's one of the best artists in the business. You look at what he did on Next Wave, look at what he did on Superman Secret Identity, he helped relaunch Star Wars.
Yeah.
He wasn't John Cassidy, he was the second artist, but Stuart Immonen has done a ton of work that people know. Like, even if you don't know the name, you probably have something by him in your collection.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did have that interesting variety of styles. I remember when he first showed up, or at least when I first became aware of him, mm-hmm. I'm going to say the 90s, I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if he was actually a guy who I considered something of an Adam Hughes clone.
I was going to say Adam Hughes definitely was influential in Neil Adams. He had that sort of that vibe.
I think I'm not going to say anybody's better than Neil Adams, but I think he is a better overall storyteller than artist than Adam Hughes is.
Yeah,
that's
just
personal preference. I like Adam Hughes too.
Also, he can meet deadlines.
He can also meet deadlines.
He was a workman. I mean,
he's been prolific. He's worked on a ton of projects. And if by chance you kind of don't know what his stuff is, do a little Googling, do some image searching, and check out what he's done.
Or better yet, read Superman Secret Identity.
Superman Secret Identity is maybe the best of his kind of like realistic style. Yeah.
And honestly,
Next Wave is a great example of his cartoony style.
And then hurt Randy by reading Next Wave.
Yep.
Hurt Randy by buying a book at his store.
Yeah.
Make him weep.
Yeah, everyone should hurt me that way.
Yeah.
All right, we got The Addams Family has an animated movie coming out, apparently.
I heard, I saw just enough to see that it's from the guy who made Sausage Party.
That's less than great.
All right, I just want to throw that out.
Yeah, that's less than great. But the voice cast is amazing. Oscar Isaac is going to voice Gomez.
That's
Charlize Theron will be on Morticia. Chloe Grace Moretz is Wednesday. Finn Wolfhard as Pugsley. Finn Wolfhard, in addition to being the best Viking name ever, is the kid from Stranger Things.
Okay. Which kid?
I don't know. One of the kids. not 11.
There's 80 kids in there.
Yeah. Nick Kroll plays Uncle Fester. Bette Midler as Grandmama. And Allison Janney as the reality TV host, who is the villain of the piece.
I have to say, that is fantastic casting.
That's fantastic
They're
casting.
They're all big names. And I assume, by the way, by doing an animated thing, isn't it CG it looked like?
Yeah.
It looks they're going to be able to base it on Charles Adams's original cartoons, or at least somewhat.
Yeah.
Which will be interesting, too.
It sounds cool. I feel like I've got the definitive version of the Addams Family in the movies.
Yeah.
But that voice cast is definitely worth noting.
Pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
All right, trailers. Lots of trailers. So we're going to go down. There was a Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet trailer. This is the first big trailer for it. Nick, I think you and I were on board. Dave is not so much.
But it looked like El Stinko.
Yeah.
No, actually, I thought it looked well done, but it almost looked like it was going to become a new kind of movie now, like as if they kind of keep to this. And it sort of felt like how we talked about how kids these days, a lot of properties that the things that they might enjoy – are kind of like mixes, you know, like, or yeah, like when people do, what is
it, the toy box?
You know when you, yeah, when you know when you, you have fan fiction and it's like, oh, I wrote a story where Star Trek met Doctor Who met Battlestar Galactica.
We've all read Ready Player One, yes.
Yes. But now that is becoming a standard thing where, so the Lego movie is a real obvious yep. one. There's video games that cross over characters.
Yep.
Even like, I mean, fighting games have been doing it for a long time now where, you know, Mega Man will be fighting like Solid Snake and, you know, all of that. So anyway, but it does throw me off a little bit. Like, for some reason, like, I didn't necessarily want Wreck-It Ralph. I wanted to maybe be a series about video games and stuff or video games and maybe things surrounding them. But by moving to the internet and all that that entails from websites like Amazon and Google and all that stuff to all these kind of like meeting the Disney princesses and stuff, it's such a weird new vibe to it.
But I like that vibe. I mean, I it reminds me
no,
of
you
like,
don't.
Well, when I was a kid, I played with toys and kind of messed around with all the different characters and working yeah. in one world. So it makes sense.
I see where Dave is coming from because I don't want this to turn to like Shrek 3 where it's all the pop culture riffs and that's all it has to yeah. offer. But I have a fair amount of faith in the people who do Wreck-It Ralph. They did a great job.
I mean, that was
going to
be my next thing.
But the other thing, the problem with Wreck-It Ralph, and to some extent Lego Movie, which we'll talk about in a minute, is that they're complete stories.
Yeah.
You kind of don't need a sequel. Like, you just kind of know where to go, which means that essentially, in order to do a sequel to Wreck-It Ralph, you have to do a completely new story.
Yeah.
With the characters that we love. Now, sometimes that works. Sometimes it turns out, like The Matrix, you should only have done the one story.
Yeah, but arguably,
times I, can
I guess best case scenario would be Toy Story, probably.
Yeah.
Like, that was a complete story,
yeah.
and they found other stuff.
More cartoon sequels work than live-action sequels
That's
do.
Generally true.
That might be true.
That's generally true. I liked this trailer. I thought the Disney Princess stuff was pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought
kind of subversive for Disney, actually, which
yeah.
is interesting. I thought it was kind of interesting that, like,
I saw the princess were being all gatekeepers.
Yeah. And, like, Snapchat was in there, and I'm like, oh,
yep.
it's going to be a little racy. It's fun.
Yep. I'm sure there will be endless cat videos and doggo videos.
Yeah.
And I love John C. Reilly and Sarah Silverman together.
Sure.
So, I mean, just getting
for sure
more,
they're going to be great. And I'm sure they have a story to tell with this other than, like, just, like, let's take a tour of pop culture. But it's clear that also that let's take a tour of pop culture is part of it.
Yeah, yeah, and that'll get people in the seats. I think you throw Disney princesses and all that.
I don't care
Marvel
about people getting in the seats.
And,
I want it to be good.
But they care about, you know, people wanting to see this movie.
I don't give a shit.
All right, Dave.
Dave just cares if people see Solo.
It's true. It's too late. The audience has spoken. They're not. let's see. What was I going to say? Something about all the different properties in it.
Well, we know Marvel's going to be.
Do we
in
know
there.
What the like? What is like? Do we know what the story is per se?
No.
Right now, it does seem like it's like a whirlwind tour.
Yeah, we don't know.
All we know is that they're going into the internet. We yeah. have no. We don't know why. We don't know what it's going
to
be.
You know,
about.
there was another movie that had a similar plot to that, and it was called The Emoji Movie. Now, I think
wow.
they probably have better writers on this. But I'm just saying that, like, I once listened to a review of The Emoji Movie, and they described, they're like, they went to, like, Google, and they went to, like, Snapchat, and all that
yeah.
stuff.
And regardless,
just
the piece
throwing
of
that
shit
out
movie
there.
Was made.
Yeah.
So I just like to throw out The Emoji Movie made $217.8 million.
Yeah.
And I believe the Solo movie thus far
has made 200 and maybe, like, 64?
Yeah, yeah. So just saying.
I'm glad y'all are so into the box office, of course.
Well, I've always...
no,
anyway, I'm sure you'd be happy to see Wreck-It Ralph follow in the footsteps of The Emoji Movie.
Yes. That's what I was going to say, is that I understand why
maybe
they do
Patrick
it, but,
Stewart can reprise his role as the poop.
Yes. No, I wanted to point out that Hollywood makes bad movies all the time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So,
but Wreck-It Ralph was a really good movie, and so,
yeah.
you know, I would hope this would be a good sequel. I actually think it probably will be, and yet it may not be for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Which brings us to Lego Movie 2, which I don't think Dave saw the trailer for.
Yeah, no, I did not.
But Lego Movie's another one. I feel like it was done. Like,
yeah, no,
it had
a story.
They tease an ending of like, oh, the kids' toys are arriving, and the kids.
Yeah.
But that didn't seem like that was just a fun little teaser.
Yeah, a little Duplo.
And
so, but surely, like, it felt like okay. So I haven't seen this. I never saw the Lego Movie either.
You haven't seen
the
Lego Movie?
Mm-mm. I think Dave gave me a copy of it.
A monster?
I ain't seen it.
Dave doesn't like Legos.
I don't like baby movies.
I can't even talk to you.
I understand that youth.
He only likes Solo. That's the only movie he wants.
That youths like them, but the surely it felt like it was like a sandbox world, though, right?
It kind of, I mean, it tells its story.
I mean,
it's
yeah, done. There is a sandbox element yeah. to it, but there is an overarching story that kind of gets completely.
Is it going to be the same characters?
Resolved. Yeah, so this picks up after the movie, and I like they're doing sort of a post-apocalyptic thing.
Yeah, it's very Mad Max. That was
kind of a fun idea.
Who's the name of the lead dude? What's his?
It's Emmett, played by Chris Pratt.
Yes.
Okay.
And then Elizabeth Banks is using more of a lead here, too, yep. which is cool.
And of course, and Batman is
and
back.
And Batman, played based by Will Arnett, which is great. But it looks like there's going to be sort of a like space invasion comes in. We don't know what the story is at this point.
Yeah.
But the
maybe it's a stealth tie-in to Wreck-It Ralph.
It could be. I thought this was a good trailer, though. I don't know where they're going with it, but I'm curious.
And I'm actually happy when movies do that nowadays with trailers.
It's surprise like, you.
Yeah, they surprise. They don't yeah. tell everything in the trailer, and yeah. we get more. And
yep. more. As much as there are sometimes those ones which still where you can be like, I think I saw the whole movie there. There is also a trend of movies that kind of do it with a lighter touch and kind of keep the mystery, and yeah. I do appreciate that.
I mean...
Is it just called Lego Movie 2, by the way?
Lego Movie 2, the second part.
The second part.
I get you.
Because, you know, parts, Legos.
Oh.
I can't believe you haven't seen Lego Movie. Eh? It's good. It's really good.
I'm sure there's some movie you haven't seen Taxi Driver.
I have seen Taxi Driver.
I can't believe you haven't seen whatever that other movie is.
It took you until you were like 5-10 years ago to see Jaws.
That's true. But yeah. I've seen Jaws. Unlike Dave, who has not seen Lego Movie.
He doesn't like
which
Legos.
Which is comparable to Jaws, so that there are sharks in both of them.
There are
practically the same.
Practically the same movie.
Richard Dreyfuss in there anywhere? Probably.
Probably. Lego Richard Dreyfuss. Anyway, there
what you're saying is it looks good.
It does. What you're saying is it looks good. What does not look good is the Bumblebee trailer.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't think it necessarily looks terrible to me.
I fall in that ballpark. I don't think it looks awful. It's not what I wanted it to
be. It looks awful to me. However, on the scale of Transformers movies, it looks like a tour de force.
Well, because they chose to make at least a trailer
yep.
that looks like it's about like a story that instead of being kind of a nihilistic jerk-off to the military,
yeah.
Looks like it's a sweet story about a girl and Bumblebee, the little VW yep. robot
well,
car.
I mean, you'd take Michael Bay out of this, and you could right. probably get
a different director.
Good.
And they bond, and there's a little bit of Iron Giant stuff, because are they going to take away poor little Bumblebee? And then there's a little bit of fighting and a like one of the jets that looks full on like G1 Transformer Starscream, I guess.
Yeah. I'll say this. Yeah, you can tell what the robots look like. You can tell what the vehicles look like, and that's an improvement.
Yeah, they don't look like just a bunch of crushed metal.
Yeah, but the problem is, I Bumblebee needs to talk. This whole thing where he talks through yeah. songs is dumb. Yeah.
They just kind of made him mute in this yeah. trailer, actually. And also, like, I mean, honestly, I have so often seen the... I'm glad there's a human element in it. Like, I think that needs to be in there. But the sort of, like, robot as pet kind yeah. of thing.
Yeah.
We've essentially seen a million versions of that, at least since E.T.
We need more of a Westworld take where Bumblebee gains sentience and starts murdering people.
Bumblebee wow. is sentient.
And then Bumblebee got dark.
Anyway,
does he have a goatee? Can he be dark from the mirror universe?
For a minute when I saw this was announced, I had forgotten that it was going to exist.
Yeah.
I thought they were just going to make more Transformers movies where they blow up stuff.
Sure.
There will be lots of explosions in this.
And because they were even showing him like as a VW at first, which was not the car he was in the Bay
right,
movies, I was like, oh, this is like a soft reboot. Maybe it has a few little ties, but it's kind of some kind of reboot. But it is clearly in that world.
Yeah, it's
I think probably he gets destroyed and rebuilds the Camaro at the end or something.
Is it in the 60s?
No, he was
or is it in
the... You're forgetting. He was the VW in the beginning.
Was he?
Oh, yeah. That's right. He got a remake. Somehow.
Yes. Like, he has the ability to change whatever car he looks like.
How could I have forgotten anything about the Transformers
movie? In the first Transformers movie, he was a VW and then quickly changed into...
Okay. Is this movie in any way a period piece, or is it just a prequel of sorts?
From what I understand, I think it's set in the 80s.
If I
could be completely wrong. I thought I read something along those lines. It's possible.
Do we? I don't remember what the story of any of the movies were either. But is this? Does anybody know? Is it just supposed to be
tied
that
in like Excalibur and King Arthur?
Yeah, I heard about that.
There was a Dark Side of the Moon.
There was a Dark Side of the Moon.
And somewhere in there was what's the big construction
Devastator
robot?
Devastator with robot
Devastator
balls.
Devastator had robot balls.
Okay. Yeah.
And also Bumblebee did pee on a man in the first
true.
One.
True.
You know what's interesting?
Yeah.
I think I've seen the first Transformers movie. And how many did they make? Like four.
Four.
Wow.
So I was just going to suggest that Bumblebee was, like, up and around and having adventures before, like, 2000 or whenever it happened.
Yeah.
And then he, like, went back and took a nap or something like that. A robot nap.
The Transformers have been active before the Transformers movie came out.
I guess so. Okay.
He's supposed to be a stealth bot.
Yeah.
That was his whole thing.
I guess it helps if you don't talk.
Anyway, even with my movie pass, there's no way I'm going to see Bumblebee.
Nope.
Dick. But...
I'll see it on Blu-ray when it hits Redbox. Yeah. That's kind of my thing.
I might go see Mortal Engines.
Really?
Yeah. So
Randy.
I need to see the trailer. I need to see reviews. But
Mortal Engines
is Peter Jackson's crazy fighting cities post-apocalyptic thing.
Literally, if you might have seen the teaser trailer some months ago, it appears to be like. It doesn't quite seem like giant cities, but smallish cities on giant tank treads wheels. And
isn't the line uttered, we have to stop London before it's too late?
Yes.
Here's my thing. The concept of this, as just verbally told, sounds awesome.
It sounds goofy and stupid.
Well, it sounds so ridiculous it just might work.
But in execution, the trailer kind of makes it silly. And I was really hoping for just that larger-than-life craziness.
Oh, I was hoping for silly.
And it looks kind of like you have Hugo Weaving as an ultimate villain, and then you've got two kids who he tried to kill that have kind of like the I'm going to save us, hero complex.
A friend of mine on Facebook did say that it looked like there was a YA vibe to it, those kids seem like teen hero.
Yeah. They are the chosen ones.
The same thing is interesting.
Only
about
you
this.
Can drive the city called Australia.
Right into London.
I think Dave nailed it when he said this is really the kind of movie that Nicolas Cage should be in.
I kept watching for him.
If Nicolas Cage was playing the character that Hugo Weaving was playing, I'd be all in. I'd be fine.
Let's also remember, by the way, Hugo Weaving at some point was like, I don't want to do any more silly superhero movies and play anybody like the Red Skull.
Yeah.
But I will be the king of a rolling England in a sort of cyber, or like, not cyberpunk, a steampunk future where cities drive.
Yeah. I think that if this, like, say, National Treasure, or some of those, is aware of its own silliness, it could be really fun. If they think they're making a serious movie, it's going to be terrible.
Possible that a straight-faced, you can play goofy, but the players in it play straight-faced. So I can't quite tell from the trailer. They look like they were playing it
serious.
Is
this going to be Peter Jackson from Lord of the Rings, or is this going to be Peter Jackson from The Hobbit?
I think it's going to be Peter Jackson from King Kong. That's my guess.
Yikes.
This movie's going to be 2 hours and 38 minutes long.
I thought King Kong was like almost 3 hours.
It might have been.
I mean, I know Randy really likes King Kong.
I did like King Kong.
I watched it recently. I did not like
it. I imagine
it was
a All right. Well, that's it for news. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week.
One familiar cry.
We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 6th. It's a pretty big week.
It is.
A lot of new Marvel stuff, some big DC releases, and a book about ladies' boob.
Right. Surprisingly, is a serious and an impressive-looking book.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to start with the Immortal Hulk number one, which is my pick for the week. This is by Al Ewing. It has art by Joe Bennett.
It's one of like eight big new Marvel books this week, or four. Maybe.
I will say this could have been my pick too.
This has fantastic artwork. I really, really like the art,
and a very different vibe from what Hulk has been for a little
while. It's sort of a horror riff in a way. Basically, it opens with a robbery gone wrong at a gas station.
It's a little bit violent.
Very violent.
Yeah.
In fact, that is my biggest complaint: is that it starts off by murdering several innocent people, and I'm like. I don't know, that's a little dark for
superhero
comics.
I will say this, though, by the way,
when you say it's very violent, although people definitely die, and they, you know, they don't kind of like, it's not like all exit wounds and stroke shots or anything like that.
No,
it's not boys violent. Not the boys. It's not Tarantino.
Yeah, no, it's just that violent things happen.
For sure.
And then the kid who does this robbery and kills some people is visited by the vengeful spirit of the Hulk.
Yep. Biker gang buddies.
Yeah.
Buddies is putting it a little too...
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, he is desperate to pay off debts and stuff like that.
It's interesting, though, because this is not...
They bring down the wrath of the Hulk.
This is not the Hulk of the movies. This is not the sort of Hulk that we've gotten. This is a sort of more... a smarter, meaner Hulk. Mm. He is basically violent revenge on criminals. It's almost a, like a Spectre take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a little bit more Punisher, too.
Yeah, it's... it's weird. It is. I think that's why the violence they had to have it is you have to want him to seek bloody revenge on these guys.
Yeah.
And there are some great moments in there, but it is. I don't know if I'll stick with it for over the long term. But it's an interesting take. Like, it's something different. Dave reminded me it is similar to the Bruce Jones run that was also sort of a little horror-y and conspiracy laden.
Right. But it was also about a Hulk who was not. You're generally fighting big bruiser villains and stuff like that. Nor was he walking around in either Bruce Jones or this one and, like, snapping off arms or crushing bones. But he did some damage.
But I feel like this is more of, like, a psychological look at the schism between Bruce Banner and Hulk and what that means and who those two characters are. If they are the same
person. It's such a different vibe that I feel like even if, like people should check it out and see what its deal is.
I think this is the most excited I've been for a Hulk book in quite some time. I really thought it was a great first issue. And Joe Bennett.
Yeah.
There's some splash pages that are just beautiful.
There's some stunning artwork in this one.
It's like that soup. And I will say this, even though it's such a different take, his art is very detailed and elaborate. Mm-hmm. And I feel that that is something that people want on the Hulk, is they want him to feel like this giant mass, you know, this living, breathing thing that really exists. Yeah. And although I like a variety of kind of like more stylized and cartoonier artworks, I can see why that sort of visceral look for the Hulk resonates with people, and that definitely is brought to the table here.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, it's weirdly out of sync with what we've seen in the movies, but it is a solid take, and I really liked it. Dave, what's your pick?
I also am picking a Marvel number one. My pick is Doctor Strange number one, written by Mark Waid and drawn by Jesus Saez.
Art is beautiful.
Saez? Yeah. I don't know how you say that. It actually almost looks painted at times, but kind of in that way that, like, Daniel Acuna's did. Like, there's clearly, like, line work, but it has a sort of painterly look to it.
Yeah.
I like it actually a lot better than what I would call the realistic painting style of, like, Alex Ross or something like that, because it still looks like comic book art. I guess in some ways it reminds me of, who's the guy who designed the modernish Iron Man armor?
Eddie Granoff.
A little bit more like that. But in any case, I have not read Doctor Strange in years. I didn't quite pick up on what Jason Aaron's run.
Yeah, Jason Aaron ran for what, like 2 years?
I
feel like it was around there.
I feel like more than that.
It might have been more than that, but it might have just been 2 years.
Yeah. But you guys reminded me that premise-wise, or at least the basic thing that kicks this off, has been done, which is Doctor Strange's powers fading. And, in this case, it happens in kind of an interesting way, which is that, like, they say first that he goes blind in one of his eyes, and what they mean is, like, not that he can't see, but that eye can no longer see, like, magic things. You know, normally, they did do, I think, a panel that was a tat tip to Jason Aaron's run, that Chris Bacalo panel of, or maybe it was the cover that showed all the magic stuff happening in the real world. And then he, like, loses sight in his other eye, and suddenly he can't see...
it's very, like, systemic, like, a virus or a disease.
Right. He even, he, like, hesitantly uses in, like, small letters the word... He wonders if it's, like, cancer.
Yeah.
He even wonders if it could be contagious to other magic users, which is another... Which is a neat, creepy idea, and you know, I feel like Mark Waid put a lot of thought into this. It's interesting because it's a very heavily narrated issue. Like, the omniscient narrator says a lot. Which is something I haven't seen in a while, but I actually ended up kind of liking it because it allowed him to kind of, in the same way novels do, to get into some deeper ideas.
Yeah.
And it moved along, I thought, at a brisk pace, too. But essentially, he goes through some ideas about trying to deal with it, and essentially is almost like coming to something of a terms with, like, oh, maybe I'm just not going to do this anymore. You know,
well, it's almost like he's going through like stages of grief in some ways.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a completely fair thing to say. And that's when he has a conversation with Tony Stark, which I liked. They are not quite as trying to, like, one-up each other as in, like, Infinity War.
Right.
But there's a little bit of that vibe there of, like, these guys are both guys who are egotists.
I was going to say, Tony's obnoxious.
Yep, and Doctor Strange can be obnoxious, or at least a little full of himself.
I've wondered if Wade had seen the movie at this point, or knew about it, because the Tony Stark-Doctor Strange interactions reminded me of the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've seen that relationship before, so...
Yeah, I couldn't remember if that had happened. I half wondered if it might have come up in Aaron's Run or something.
Nope. No.
But... Where I believe it will, you know, so in Aaron's Run, y'all told me, and I remember this now, he ended up, like, using sort of other magic devices and things like that.
Yeah, he was basically, like, using, like, amulets and weapons and things like right. that had, like, the last bits of magic.
Which is just a cool idea. And here, Tony Stark is like, well, so you've lost power before, and he's like, yeah, usually I kind of find some place on Earth and kind of recharge, but, like, now nothing is happening, I can't do it. And Tony Stark puts out this idea that maybe he needs to leave Earth. And he's like, I can help you with that. I have a ship you could pilot. I have, you know, it's, you know, you can move around with, like, a star drive and all that stuff. And you can see if you can kind of reclaim your power through other energy sources and stuff. And it's a kind of a wild premise, but that is what gets things going. And we are clearly going to have off-world adventures for Doctor Strange. When I was writing it up, they proclaimed in the promotion for it, like, new enemies, new allies, new spells, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. If they actually very specifically, like, we don't quite see the how it's all going to come about, but I think it'd be interesting if he had to, like, kind of, like, learn alien cultures a bit to figure out how their magic works, or, you know, to kind of seize on, like, new ideas. Learn alien spells. I mean, I have no idea if that's what's going to happen or not. It's just speculation.
There's a lot for Mark Waid to play around with here.
Yeah, I think he's basically... This kind of is setting up the sandbox that he will be playing around in throughout the thing. Anyway, I really liked it. It has that art that I would almost recommend it just for the art. But it was also, for me, just a fun... Yeah, this felt like Doctor Strange to me. This also... I'm maybe a slightly picky Doctor Strange reader, and Aaron's for some reason never quite rang true. I think Matt Fraction's didn't quite ring true, but I kind of liked his Defenders version anyway.
Well, I will say this: what I noticed, and maybe Randy will correct me on this, but the difference between Mark Waid's Doctor Strange and Jason Aaron's Doctor Strange, Aaron made him a little more quippy, like a little more. He was definitely more humor.
He was a little bit of a dog too. He was a philanderer.
Yeah, and Waid is
that came from Fraction.
Did it?
Yeah,
you're right.
But Waid is making him sort of like, not like elder statesman, but it's sort of like the quintessential version. I think that he probably grew up with.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's the fact that it kind of reflects my Doctor Strange a little bit more. Weirdly, don't particularly mind the philanderer thing, as long as he's not, like, destroying lives.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would hope that it's just his casual ways, and that he's finding like-minded people. But the quippiness was one of those things, now that you mention it, that bugged me. So yeah, this reins it in a little bit and does feel... Like, I didn't even particularly read much Doctor Strange as a kid, but it does feel more like the ones that I did read. He feels more like... more like that guy.
I do like the notion of kind of pushing Doctor Strange in like a Buck Rogers kind of craziness together.
Yeah.
So
we'll see how that goes. Yeah, they mentioned he's like uncomfortable in space. He's like, I've been to space before. I don't like it. you know, I want to see him go to the Skrull homeworld. I want to see him, you know, deal with the Nova Corps. I want to, you know. Any of those things out there. He does name drop Roger Rabbit, Rocket Raccoon in this. He's like, Tony, I'm not Rocket Raccoon. I can't do this or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, like all those things are just surmises. We'll see. But I'm definitely on board to see where it's going.
Very cool.
You have?
I have another first issue, though mine is not from Marvel. And mine is from DC.
What? You sicken me.
But Sure. if that sickens you, I am sorry.
I mean, you pick out such a super weird book as
Justice League number one. I mean, I think that's the most obscure book I've ever picked. Let me tell you.
Yeah, we were all our picks are all super mainstream. Randy's like, I love Hulk, and I'm like, I like Doctor Strange, and Nick's like, I like the Justice League.
Dave, you and I have indie style backup picks.
Yeah,
Nick's a sellout whore.
I am sure.
Okay. We're courtesans.
Yes, we're courtesans.
But going back, away sorry, from yes. your courtesanship,
right?
Justice League number one, new series by Scott Snyder, Jim Chung.
Not a nobody creative team.
No, not
am
a
I
nobody.
The only person that whenever you say Jim Chung's name, you hear it in the Law and Order style.
Jim Chung.
Yes, I probably always. From now on. Will.
But from now on, yes. What was the last
You're
thing?
Welcome.
Jim Chung, I remember, has did like that really beautiful artwork on like a couple Young Avengers miniseries. But he's also like has he just done some Avengers stuff?
He did first of all issue of like Marvel 2-in-1.
Yeah, and last one too.
Yeah, and he's done things periodically.
Yeah,
but
he's fantastic.
He went over to DC now, and now he's doing Justice League.
Ah, is this his first DC project?
It might be, actually.
Okay. So what do we got going on in this?
So basically, it's spinning out of Justice League No Justice, which I think was a great four-issue mini. The source wall has been broken, and all hell is breaking loose. The Justice League have reformed.
Did they not patch it up in No Justice?
No. Oh. You can't patch up the source wall being broken.
They don't have like some kind of apocalyptic band-aid?
Dave, it's not called Justice League Justice and we fixed the source wall. It's called No Justice.
Oh.
It was the mission statement was to fail.
And this is, it was all sort of about reforming the Justice League.
Right.
Which was accomplished and we get it here. We have a new Hall of Justice, which is
it's the straight up the one that people, I guess, know from Super Friends.
Which is pretty cool.
But kind of re-envisioned in a much cooler way.
And sort of the detail that Snyder goes into is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I thought it was really a cool idea. And this is a very meaty issue. There is a lot going on.
I'm gonna just say what one of the things were, but they mentioned like the material, although it like looks like marble, is actually like some kind of like alien.
Yeah, that Superman found.
It's some alien mineral
world.
Or something that like retains its brightness all the time, so that even on like a cloudless night, it seems like the sunlight is hitting it. And
yeah. Which is just an awesome shining example of what
you know,
should be.
Snyder's one of them writers, always throwing out their ideas.
And there's this.
Does that mean the Hall of Justice closed in the dark?
Yes,
I would hope.
Okay. All right.
It's a shining beacon.
Well, and it's like this 2-page splash of just about the Hall of Justice, like the rooms and sort of things like that. And it reminds me a little bit of like what Jason Aaron did with the Sanctum Sanctorum, kind of giving you in that first issue a rundown of some of the fun things in there.
Yep.
It's sort of the fun things you can find if you walk through the Hall of Justice.
Right, the idea of like, what if you got to go on a tour as if it were a museum or whatever of like the Hall of Justice. There's a great bit in there where they're recounting one of the reporters like asks or somebody asks Batman.
Senator.
Or Senator says it's like, well, how do we know that these are, you know, I know that all the devices are supposed to be deactivated, but how do we know it's really safe? And Batman is like, well, do you want to give it a try?
Yeah.
and Snyder wrote that moment. He's very aware of Batman's image and has a little fun with it. And interestingly, has the other players have some fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, without getting too goofy, I think.
Yeah.
I think it felt more like they were friends.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, after that, it sort of builds into a huge world-ending threat and various members of the team working together sort of in conjunction with Martian Manhunter. And it is this series of large panels.
We were hoping that Martian Manhunter would have kind of a...
Well, and he's the backbone. I mean, he is the sort of the thing that holds them together.
I basically always want him in the Justice League.
Yeah, well, it does. It feels a little bit like Snyder was riffing on Justice League Unlimited a little bit.
Oh, very much so.
Martian Manhunter turns into a moon-eating dragon, which is a reference to Super Friends.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
I remember that episode.
That's a Super Friends reference.
That's
and also,
crazy.
I just love the rapport that all the characters have.
Yeah.
That it feels very much sort of like what the Marvel Cinematic Universe does
it
with
does.
The Avengers.
It also feels like Morrison's Justice League. It's
it
big
does.
And broad, and it's sort of a return to classics. Even though it's got a bigger team than that, it does sort of have the Big Seven in there as well.
I love having Hawkgirl back.
Yeah.
She's a great character, and using her in this... I mean, she doesn't have a mace, but, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah.
So I didn't read the whole thing. How is Hawkgirl back, I guess?
Hawkgirl was used in the Dark Knight's Metal. She was, like, working for an organization that was, like, so secret. She knew Carter Hall, and
The Secret Order of Hawks.
Yeah, okay, sure. There we go. But she's back, and
is it possible? Do we know? Is she still from Austin?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Damn it!
We've lost our.
No.
But we have the champions since they have a base in Austin.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
Except now they operate out of Canada because they had a good new Canadian writer.
Oh, right.
Little shits.
Canadians stealing all our Austin superheroes.
But they're going up against this big threat. It does remind me kind of a Justice League Unlimited episode because you do give a big threat. There's a resolution to that threat. There's more like threads about more things going on behind that.
Is the threat a known threat? I'm not even going to ask you for the name, but is it like Despero or Starro or somebody?
There's a notable villain.
Okay.
And then there are more notable villains.
Oh.
But yeah, this is also sort of an exploration of who John Jones is. Sort of the things that have happened in his life, getting the Justice League back together. And I think Jim Chung does a really good job with all the characters, and there's a villain in particular that I love seeing back to what he once was, and if not even more. So I knew you were going to say that.
I held off for a minute, but then I couldn't help it.
But I will not say.
It's because you're a good person.
But, yeah. But honestly, this is what I want Justice League to be. Big, giant, fun, and
well, we all hold Grant Morrison's run in high regard.
Yeah.
And that was like after a long time of them not quite being those people.
Yeah,
he did it, and it's interesting to see the reverberations it has because people still emulate him. But like for sure, like Snyder has his own voice here.
Yeah,
but that notion that of having the biggest and the best. But also that they are friends that can kind of talk like normal human beings.
Yeah.
But sometimes also say things like, "Oh my God, a space dragon's eating the moon."
But I will say that while this does have typical Snyder, Snyder writing just Batman was kind of dour. I mean, there were some fun aspects to it, but that was more in story. It wasn't in sort of personality. Here, I think he gets to kind of unleash sort of his fun writing these characters because they all have different, aspects to them that Batman doesn't have, since Batman is just kind of a sourpuss.
Right. So Snyder,
to have fun writing The Flash.
And he must have been starting to get to that place through Dark Knight's Metal, right?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely got to write, like, Superman and Wonder Woman and a few others. But here he gets to, basically he gets to write whoever he wants from the DC Universe and kind of unleashes things.
I want to do that.
Yeah, I know. Who wouldn't want to do that? But yeah, I loved it. And then I guess my backup pick, not going to stray that far from DC, as I'm picking Batman number 48, which is leading up to the wedding, and it's a two-issue story entitled The Best Man, which is all about the Joker. And honestly, basically this is 24 pages of listening to the Joker rant.
Isn't the Joker like the terrible man? I don't think he's the best man.
Well, he wants to be Batman's best man.
Oh.
He feels like he is the best man.
I thought they were trying to convince us that he was the best man.
Yeah, and I wasn't buying it.
No.
How many horses has he killed?
No, not horses in here. There's actual people. He's
who be drawing?
This is Michael Janin.
Man.
It is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I can tell that is going to crush my spirit just by how good his art is.
And Tom King's Joker is just kind of dark, and
people who want a little bit some of that some of what Heath they missed Ledger. When Heath Ledger departed the world has been transformed or passed on to this comic.
I mean, it's like the Heath Ledger version mixed with some of the Mark Hamill insanity, but it's this weird new amalgamation that's even darker in some ways.
King has his own version of how the Joker's insanity plays out.
Yeah, and it's really put on display here with sort of the way his basically monologues.
Right.
And kind of how it's fractured and sort of talking about six different things at various times and seeing how Batman responds to that with actually like little to no talking. He actually utters maybe like one or two lines the entire book. It's all the Joker. And I don't think I've seen that before.
Right.
And I like that Tom King always does this. He takes an idea and sort of runs with it. And every issue, I'm kind of surprised by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more his run goes on, the more he tries different things. I've been enjoying it. I'm curious to see where the wedding goes. and how this story, how the Joker kind of fits into this.
The Joker kills both of them at the wedding. There's no Batman issues after it.
I wouldn't be shocked, honestly. If Tom King did that, I wouldn't be shocked.
Killed Batman? I don't think that's going to happen.
Morrison killed Batman.
The bullet will miss him and hit a horse.
Morrison killed Batman, and we had Grayson as Batman for a while.
That's true. That's true.
You know what it's going to be? The horse is going to become Batman.
A new angry horse.
Yes, a new angry
horse. No other horses would be shot.
How many times have we mentioned the horse? I feel like it's a lot.
Not enough. Batman shot a horse in the desert. We're going to keep making fun of that forever.
It was dying. He didn't want it to die. He didn't want it to hurt.
Batman doesn't shoot things.
He should have thrown a batarang real hard at it, like I said. And then he'd be like, oh, it only kind of hurt it. I'm going to have to do this probably like 20 or 30 times.
No, then he'd be like the Golden Age Batman, a fitting end for his kind.
That's right.
It's so much worse. Why would you
The weight that? Of crime bears bitter fruit, doesn't it, horse?
Nay.
Made it worse.
Dave, I think it's time for your backup.
Oh boy. See, that's why we keep mentioning the stupid horse.
That's why, yes.
Yeah, I know.
I haven't even read the issue. Nope. Probably completely unfairly judging it.
Oh yeah.
But yeah. My backup is the fourth and final issue of a series I've maybe picked most of the issues of.
If not all, yeah.
The Black Hammer spinoff, Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows. This is issue 4, final issue. Is it the first? No, this is the second one that's completed. So they had Sherlock Frankenstein.
Yep.
It's
second miniseries, yeah. Yeah,
right,
second.
But Sherlock Frankenstein finished. This is the second one to complete.
Right.
Unless you consider Black Hammer, they did sort of break it up into seasons. And like Sherlock Frankenstein, this one has another strong sort of moving, very character-driven ending. Dr. Star, who we've met in here, who was his analog to like the Golden Age Starman in DC, especially as envisioned by James Robinson. In his Starman series of the 1990s, so much so that he actually named his character like Dr. Robinson or something
Jimmy
like
Robinson.
That. Jimmy Robinson, yeah. But essentially, we've seen that in his superhero career, he kind of first in some ways failed his wife by being sort of this workaholic, and then by like he did some like galaxy hopping and stuff, you know. This and originally, of course, I believe he was all to make the better family.
Mm-hmm.
He took a government contract to work on their crazy tech because he wanted to provide, and in doing so, he destroyed his family. And so he, when he was out traveling, time passed in the decades, and he came back to find, you know, a wife who didn't love him anymore and a son who was dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell it's an upbeat book.
Yep.
I will say, like a lot of Jeff Lemire stuff, it's not brutally heavy throughout, but there is definitely a dark streak throughout this one that wasn't, say, for instance, in Sherlock Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And this one moves towards an emotional resolution as the father, Dr. Star, kind of tries to come to some sort of terms with his son, who can't even communicate or anything like that, and get some sort of redemption. And it's a very, very touching and kind of difficult ending, but I thought that it was a strong ending.
I agree.
Now here's a question. Have we seen Dr. Star in any of the Black Hammer stuff?
No, this is a side story.
Yeah.
So this is
He's essentially,
true.
I think, world building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This also essentially introduced, their version of the Green Lantern Corps.
Which was also their version of the Legion of Superheroes.
Right. And does a whole lot of Golden Age building.
So it sort of feels a piece to like Astro City.
It is.
Like
it is in its way.
I
it is.
That.
You know, I've mentioned this a few times, but when he created Black Hammer, his afterword to it explained where he kind of wanted to do write about all the things that fascinate him, which is he does love Marvel and DC superheroes, but he likes stories in small towns. He likes stories about dysfunctional families. You know.
Yeah.
And all of them have elements of that. So it's almost like Astro City has such a broad template that it's always trying all kinds of stories. It's like, oh, here's a story that's a look inside a criminal's mind.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a story about a young couple with their, you know, that's just trying to make it and just
Whatever,
had their first
sort of
kid.
Interesting Busiek at the
right.
time.
The Jeff Lemire stuff is a little bit more, in its way, more personal because they all reflect a certain kind of worldview and they do sort of feel like they're definitely like... it's like his id a little bit on the paper, yeah. Which isn't to say they all feel the same. Like Sherlock Frankenstein was kind of really, you know how what was that show on Netflix where they interviewed the serial killers? Mindhunter.
Mindhunter, yeah.
It was like Mindhunter with supervillains. They were interviewing big bad supervillains in prisons. That's what the whole premise was. She had a goal. She was trying to find out some stuff, and that comes out through it. But you know what it was an opportunity for her to meet with a bunch of bizarro criminals.
I'm just wondering if we'll see Dr. Starr again, because I mean,
I feel certain of it.
Because that character from Sherlock Frankenstein, that's Blackhammer's daughter, right?
Correct.
She feeds into the main story.
Well, this guy does like weird dimension hopping or like, you know, space hopping. I feel like who's the Adam Strange analog in Blackhammer?
Oh, right. I can't.
Colonel Weird.
I could easily see him coming across Dr. Starr at some point and Dr. Starr's story interweaving with theirs. That said, even if for some reason this is just to fill out the world that Jeff Lemire was creating and it's just because he had all these ideas and really wanted to build up this world, I'm okay with that too. But I do have a feeling they will end up mixing.
Yeah, thank you. Very right.
Randy, your backup.
So my backup is Dazzler X Song, a one-shot featuring Dazzler.
I would not have guessed a Dazzler comic would ever make any of our picks.
Yeah, so this is written by Magdalene Visaggio, who's one of the few trans people working in comics. She wrote Kim and Kim and
Black Man. I forgot this had a pedigree.
And the artist by Laura Braga, who has done a lot of stuff on DC's Bombshells, worked on Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica. And this is a great one-shot. It is basically about Dazzler. She stepped down from the mutant hero life and started a band. And
she's actually like touring under a pseudonym.
Yeah, she's touring under a pseudonym.
Not super secret, but
Lightbringer.
Kind of Colossus, on the down low.
Colossus comes and visits her and tries to get her to come back to the X-Men. She's like, no, I'm just doing this now. And she's doing this stuff in these clubs that is sort of they touch on the mutant inhuman divide.
Right.
And there's an inhuman with sort of sound-based powers who is like a big fan of the band who meets Dazzler. And what's interesting about this is that it's got an agenda that is it's using the mutant metaphor, which has been used everything from racism to gay rights.
Yep.
The way that they use the inhuman and the mutant to touch on the what they call TERFs, the trans-exclusionary radical feminists.
Right.
The notion is basically these: just because you are a minority group doesn't mean it's okay to discriminate against another minority group.
Right. And I thought this was a fascinating and you know, the same way when we were reading Morrison's run.
Yep.
There were some ideas he had in there that I loved that were so really felt like they took baseline like mutant concepts and brought them into the 21st century, like the notion that Magneto would gain a following, you know, the Magneto was right t-shirts,
yep.
But also that there was a certain trendiness to mutants, yeah. Even though people kind of hated them, but they also kind of dug them, kind of sexy. This notion of like a divide between mutants and inhumans that feels like, I mean, this is a weird jump, but like also like sort of like dark or light skinned people of color, right. You know, that's a known divide sometimes.
The thing I liked about it is that it's the metaphor is clear, but it's not beat you over the head, Judd Winnick style clear.
Right.
It's not obnoxiously so. It's just because I know the writer, and I can see that
right.
Subtext. But the storyline it does what comics do well, which is to take an actual issue and explore it through metaphor instead of being on right. the nose.
It's what sci-fi does too. It's just that they use a different set of tools than sci-fi.
And beyond that, it's also just a really solid story. It's a story about a new character meeting up with Dazzler. Dazzler deciding what she wants out of life.
I feel like Dazzler is a pretty well-realized character.
There's some good action, and it sort of probably is going to lead her back into the X-Men books. So
there's actually a bit in there that I like where Colossus is like, hey, why don't you come back to the team? And I think she even says like she's thought about it, and she said like she's like almost like I'm not ruling it out.
Right.
I kind of appreciated that the book acknowledged that it's kind of like it's doing a side story, and it's not going to try and force the character to become. You know, like, to be doing some certain thing for the next several years. It's like, she knows she might end up with the X-Men again.
Yeah. I also think that her Colossus this year is heavily influenced by the Deadpool movie.
It's interesting. I did like him. He wasn't cartoony or anything.
No, but he's the outreach character. He's the one who believes in the dream, who comes looking for her, which is very much
which makes sense.
What he represents in the end.
Yeah, that is a fairly clever offshoot of that.
Also on my list this week, there's two more Mark Waid books. There's Captain America number 703, which I'm actually really enjoying, this sort of futuristic story of a historian that's a descendant of Steve Rogers. Ant-Man and the Wasp puts together the Scott Lang Ant-Man and the Nadia Wasp for kind of a fun intergalactic romp. X-Men Red number 5, which uses Namor in a mutant book, and I like it, which is rare. There's also a Sentinel painted with rainbows.
Which I loved.
X-Men Gold wraps up the prelude to Till Death Do Us Part and has a big sort of action sequence and is leading into the wedding issue. Hunt for Wolverine Weapon Lost number 2 is more detective fiction as these guys are on the hunt for Wolverine. Selly's is a Lion Forge Roar, which is a sort of a teenage book. It's about a dude who works at a phone store on the eve of their big midnight release. The story is weird. It's like, it's so not anything. It's it's just this goofy little story.
It's really nice artwork.
But the artwork by Joe Flood is what caught my attention. Then there is the trade paperback of Tales of Suspense featuring Hawkeye and Winter Soldier, which I really, really liked. And there is, I mentioned in the up, something called About Betty's Boob, which is a beautifully drawn, it is translated from foreign language, it's mostly silent. It's a big sort of...
It's like an indie graphic novel.
Yeah, big goofy adventure with spectacular artwork about a woman with breast cancer that seems to have found a magic boob from a gypsy.
Oh, okay. I did not realize that. I thought it might even be like a pretty serious story, and obviously it goes to some serious places.
It does, but it's more goofy.
Oh, that's interesting.
I
can't believe how good the art is.
Yeah,
though.
The art is really, really gorgeous, so definitely worth a look. Dave, what is on your backup list?
Let's see. What was I going to say? Oh, a new book from DC called The Unexpected. It's a team superhero book that... Dick, did you read that already?
I did.
Okay, so you can... I'll let you comment on it in a minute.
Okay.
The only other one I was going to mention was the new Brian Wood book, which almost feels like it could be a spinoff of his... let's see. He's done 2 Viking books, Northlanders, and what was the other one that he was doing?
Black Road.
It feels like it could be a spinoff of that that's about a sort of estranged father and daughter that are actually, it seems like, out to get revenge on some Vikings that wrecked their village, but they have a very, very strained personal relationship for reasons you'll find out if you read it. But as always, Brian Wood has this great sense for historical adventure and drama, and I was intrigued by the first issue. Has a nice art that reminded me a little bit of, say, Steve Lieber, that kind of, like, realism, but kind of it's kind of comes from a tradition of like illustrator art, I think. But it is more, you know, more sort of essentially medieval stories. I think it's like set in 900 AD from Brian Wood. So if you've liked any of his Viking stuff before, I would recommend for sure checking out Sword Daughter. So Nick, yeah, what's the deal with The Unexpected? It's kind of a weird.
Before that, you did skip one.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's called Vagrant Queen. This is actually written by Magdalene Visaggio, who's Kim and Kim in the Dazzler one shot.
Oh, okay.
It's her new.
I was
sort
thinking
of sci-fi
that maybe this was, but I was like, did that person write 2 books this week?
Yep.
What?
It's her new sort of sci-fi epic from Vault Comics about sort of a.
Who she thinks she is, Jeff Lemire? You can't write 2 books in a week.
About a queen.
She's like an exiled king,
throne,
right?
Yeah,
or queen. I mean.
Who's come back to find her mother. And,
yep.
Of course, there's some sci-fi stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
It looks great. The Unexpected, number one, is sort of a... kind of set in the DC universe, spinning out of Dark Knight's metal, about individuals with superpowers, especially one called Firebrand, who has, like, this infernal heart that she has to feed by fighting at once a day.
Right. I thought that was a neat idea that literally... I mean, to fuel the character, she basically has to have conflict
yeah.
once a day.
Yeah.
Isn't Firebrand an old DC name? They
yep.
used it back
mm-hmm.
in, like...
Yep.
Not the Outsiders and not the JSA, but it was one of those in-between ones.
I recognized it,
yeah.
but I couldn't... There's a lot of that in here. There's a lot of sort of weaving in sort of DC
deep
universe,
cut history
deep
sort
cut
of stuff.
Stuff. And this is written by Steve Orlando with beautiful art by Ryan Sook and Kerry Nord.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sort of a team element to this. There's kind of like an X-Men kind of vibe
mm-hmm.
mixed with a little bit of Doom Patrol. Because it's definitely dealing with kind of craziness, and then there's
you know,
magic.
Famously, the X-Men and Doom Patrol debuted at about the same time, and they were both like about teams of outcasts led by wheelchair-bound geniuses who fought a brotherhood of evil in both
yeah.
cases. Maybe somebody just finally said, well, what if we just had them both together in the same story, X-Men and Doom Patrol? Other things on my list, Man of Steel number 2, Bendis continues to tell his 6-issue miniseries about the Man of Steel.
And the man who may have destroyed Krypton.
And the man who may have destroyed Krypton, and an appearance by Toyman.
You know what I kind of like, one of the things I like in this is that the way Superman's kind of got a little bit of a smart-ass sense of humor with his villains.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you don't get the impression that they would, like, you know, like, get some sneering remark in and, like, you know, leave, like, the farm boy with his mouth hanging open. Like, he's going to kind of give back a little bit, and I kind of appreciate it. I was sort of hoping Bendis would bring that, kind of like Warren Ellis did back at one point, and he did. Yeah. So, I'm still not sure where I'm going to land on this one, but I like some of what he's doing.
But there was some great artwork in here by Evan Shaner and Steve Rude and Jay Fabok.
Yeah, yeah.
Batman Prelude to the Wedding Part 2, Nightwing versus Hush, sees the two characters go up against each other while there is a basically a bachelor party with Superman, Nightwing, and Batman.
Okay, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I need to remake my sign now because I didn't know there was a bachelor party in it.
Tim Seeley gets to have a little fun. I love that Superman is involved. There's a sort of a new take on Hush, which I actually rather liked. And then there's the continuation of... No More Mummy. Yes, No More Mummy, that is what it is. But there's sort of the continuation of Joker and Rachel Ghoul in it as well. So, oh, okay. Then there's Infinity Countdown number 4, which is, I think, the penultimate issue of the series. If you're into the cosmic stuff, there are some big things that happen in this issue.
What are they?
I'm not going to tell you, other than Galactus is involved. Warlock, alternate realities.
Warlock is playing a role where...
Yeah, a major role.
You know, so I was talking with a customer earlier today, and he was minorly dismayed that the Infinity War movie did not have more Warlock in it. He was not like a... he was not somebody who could have, I think... He was too young to have read... Infinity Gauntlet when it first came out, but I think he must have read it before the movie came out and imprinted pretty hard on it.
Yep.
And then he was like, this isn't anything like Infinity Gauntlet. Actually, I don't think he disliked it, but he was a little thrown by it. It was just interesting. But we've got Warlock.
You do have Warlock.
Yep.
And then my final one is Deadpool number 1 by Scotty Young and Nick Klein. Honestly, if you enjoyed the Deadpool movie, this book is written for you.
It was very movie-esque.
I mean, Scotty Young goes even as far as to bring Negasonic Teenage Warhead as his sort of counterpart that handles all of his kind of merc hirings, which is a little bizarre.
Has that character not really particularly existed in Morrison? Like, wasn't it some Morrison
creator?
Well, yeah. Morrison creator, but it was a
She really hasn't been around, right?
Well, she's shown up here, but she's a much different character.
Very different character,
okay.
Yeah.
And this is definitely the movie. And it feels like Ryan Reynolds. I mean, Scotty Young definitely captures that. And there's bloodshed, chaos, jokes. There's a unicorn.
What was like
underwear that is?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was trying to get to. I flipped through it and I was scandalized by it.
And also the Guardians of the Galaxy show up because they can.
Why not?
But yeah, that is all that I have. All
right, that's comics for the week. We'll be back in just a second. Dave and I are going to talk a couple movies.
Talking about comics, movies, and fame. They even talk about board games. No week is the same.
All right, we're going to talk a couple of movies. There may be mild spoilers for the movie Upgrade, which some of you might be intending to see, and for the movie First Reformed, which probably none of you have heard of.
Yep. It's an art house type movie. But it's got Ethan Hawke in it, and you've probably seen Ethan Hawke one day.
Yeah, you saw Ethan Hawke. You've seen him. He's going to play Hawkman. He has to.
Ethan Hawkman.
Yes,
yeah,
Ethan
sure.
Hawkman, yes. So I went and saw Upgrade because the trailer was great, and my last movie pass for the month, and I was not disappointed. It is a sci-fi horror action thriller kind of thing.
Hmm. I don't think necessarily from the trailers I got horror out of that.
The violence is sort of horrific.
You mentioned RoboCop as a bit of an influence on it.
The
so
notion of sort of losing control of your body.
Sure.
And also sort of the... There's a little bit of that Cronenberg body horror. It's a world where people get cybernetic implants.
Well, yeah. So that's another because you mentioned RoboCop. I assume that there was a little bit something more going on in this movie than just like I get robot parts and I beat dudes up.
Yeah. Well, in the trailers you saw the dudes with the guns in their arms.
Yeah, I only kind of vaguely remember it.
Okay. Well, basically, I don't want to give too much away, but there's this guy. he is a blue-collar dude who sort of builds his own, rebuilds classic cars in a world when most cars are self-driving. And his wife is working for this this corporation that does like robotics and that kind of thing. And he is building a car for this eccentric millionaire type dude who's like apparently the Steve Jobs of the future.
Yep.
And when they go to deliver the car, this millionaire introduced him to STEM, which is this crazy smart brain that will replace, can do all number of things. Through a series of events, his wife is murdered. That's in the trailer. It's not a big spoiler.
Right.
His wife is murdered by what?
It's kind of like one of those John Wick things.
There's going to be a random crime encounter, and he gets STEM implanted in him, and it is a thing that talks to him. And,
it's like having an AI kind of thing,
and,
right?
An AI that's a little vicious-minded.
Yeah.
And then it helps him find and track down his wife's killers and enact bloody revenge on them. There's more to the story than that. I won't give too much away. But
it's
also
almost like at times it looked like on the trailers, like it's like... It's like it's him talking and his mind and everything, but it's like he just turns his body over to to the AI.
The robot is running the body, and the actor does a great job of sort of acting like
it's a little bit of comedic stuff, I assume.
It's not. I mean, not really.
Because it was in the trailer.
There's some elements of it. Yeah. There's. I mean, like I say, darkly humorous.
Yeah.
But yeah, this guy definitely has. This is another thing that made me think of RoboCop is that Peter Weller had to do like mime classes to move in that giant suit to move like a robot. This guy definitely moves like a guy being controlled by a robotic interface.
You think that Peter Weller like also got like some like breakdancing like kind of classes in there? Like RoboCop could have breakdanced if
I'm
we
sure
wanted.
Just in case.
Could have done the worm, could have popped and locked.
You always want to be prepared to do a cybernetic breakdance.
Right. Sorry, just an aside there.
Yeah. Anyway, I really like this. Blumhouse is the people behind it. They've had a pretty generally decent track record with me.
Yep.
I thought it delivered on everything I wanted from the trailer and is a smart sci-fi story. And I kind of think they could do a sequel if they wanted to.
I think those guys make every fourth movie is a Blumhouse movie.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's right.
But, again, track record pretty good, you know? I can't complain. Disney makes two of the other one of four.
Dave, you did not go see my dumb ultraviolet sci-fi movie. Instead, you went and saw some smart indie movie.
Yeah, it still had some ultraviolence in it, though.
Oh, okay.
It's from the guy who wrote Taxi Driver, so... he knows something about violence.
Yep.
I don't know if I've ever seen a more violent sequence than the ending of Taxi Driver. So Paul Schrader did this movie called First Reformed that's about a pastor and a church, and in its way is reflective of Taxi Driver. I don't think it's something he intended to do, but it does follow a guy as he definitely descends into like a sort of breakdown. And that guy is Ethan Hawke. He's a guy who... He sort of is pastor for this church that's really kind of a showpiece church. It's like a historical, like, Dutch Reformed church or something like that. And, like, on Sundays, like, 7 or 8 people are there. But mostly people... He takes them on, like, tours. The rent is, I think, sort of paid for by a nearby mega church, which he's on friendly terms with. But, you know, you can kind of tell he feels like he's a little bit of an appendage, just a little hanger-on. And he also isn't, I think, wild about their sort of morality. So where things get interesting in this is that a young woman approaches him and asks him to talk to her husband. She's pregnant, and he is trying to push her to have an abortion. The young lady is played by Amanda Seyfried,
is it?
And I don't know who her husband is, but when he kind of agrees to talk to him, and the guy ends up being a little bit more challenging to talk to than he thought, because the guy is a kind of radical environmentalist, and he's been in and out of jail, and the reason he wants his wife to have an abortion is because he thinks that this is no world to bring a kid into, and that it's going. And he's like, you know, kind of persuasive in it. You can tell that. So what's his name? Ethan Hawke, he's like got his own mental issues he's dealing with. He drinks too much. He's got some health issues that are starting to develop, and so this movie kind of asks some big questions about like. There is some big questions about where is the world going, you know, and what does a guy who's sort of a man of God think about that? Because he kind of recognizes that this guy maybe does have something to say, even if he's a little extreme, but he's kind of disgusted that nobody else that from his, like, church or the mega church or whatever has any interest in it whatsoever, even after the guy kills himself, which sets some other things in motion, including his own possible radicalization. He starts thinking, especially because of his health problems, about kind of going out with a bang. And because he kind of has access to this dude's journals and stuff like that, and the guy was clearly considering doing some violent terrorist-type radical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He starts thinking about that. In the meantime, he's also... There is, like, this undercurrent of romantic interest with Amanda Seyfried. And there's a whole lot going on in the movie. It is a slow movie. They're like, that's it's pretty juicy for a drama. There's a lot of stuff in it. But it's slow at times, I won't lie. Paul Schrader, he wrote, among other things, some of the Martin Scorsese's earliest classics, so Taxi Driver, and also Raging Bull. He did Bringing Out the Dead in the 90s, which I still need to see. And he's occasionally been directing him as well. So I guess this was kind of one of his occasional directing efforts.
Hmm.
Apparently the dude's in his 80s. So anyway... it's a challenging kind of movie, but not like, you know, not art house in the sense where you're like, what just happened? You know, what do those falling leaves mean? Like, there is one or two scenes that are kind of ambiguous, but I would actually put it more on the level of a movie like, what's the one that, a few years ago, or like 10 or 15 years ago that, I can't even, Kevin Spacey made, where he was, middle-aged guy chasing after the cheerleader girl.
American Beauty,
yes. It was in my head. I was like, it's not American Pie.
No. Nope.
Anyway,
different.
You know how American Beauty was kind of an accessible type
yep.
film?
Yep.
All right, this is not that level of accessible, but it's not wildly removed from it. So, and it asks some interesting questions. Anyway, I enjoyed it. I have, you know, it's maybe a few criticisms of it, but... overall, very, very interesting. I was kind of riveted throughout, and honestly, it's dark tone. Sometimes I want that, and that movie, the movie delivered. And boy, did it deliver. anyway.
All right. I guess that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.